Merry Christmas, everyone. You may be seated. The entire Western Hemisphere approaches Christmas with a spirit of anticipation and joy because they very much want to be filled up. But the truth is, Christmas doesn't always fill us with good things. My favorite secular Christmas song is We Wish You a Merry Christmas. Okay, I'll need a little bit of backup here. Will you be my choir? All right. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Very nice. That was well done. That's what they get to enjoy every Sunday. I thought that was worth it. Now, I was reminded by TC just a couple days ago about the second verse, because it takes an unusual turn. Do you know the song? How many of you know the next verse in the song? Okay, so it's an old Celtic carol, apparently, hundreds and hundreds of years old, and the second verse is actually pretty strange. How does that go? Bring us some fitty pudding, and bring up some figgy pudding, and bring up some figgy pudding, and bring it right here. Hey, take it easy, all right? We were having a Merry Christmas. Everybody was enjoying themselves. We were anticipating the new year, and then somebody got a little pitchy, you know what I'm saying? Like, bring us some figgy pudding. And I was like, hey, that's not actually very Christmassy at all. And then, do you know the third verse? The belligerence gets enhanced dramatically. We won't leave until we get some. We won't leave until we get some. I'm not leaving until I get some, so bring it right now. Wow. This is so strange. I thought we were having a nice Christmas party and wishing everyone a Merry Christmas, and then this is actually a Christmas song that has lasted for centuries, and I think it's actually indicative of the fact that Christmas doesn't always fill us with the good stuff. It sometimes fills us with lesser things. How many of you have been driving any time recently? Has anyone driven a vehicle in the last week? Raise your hand if you're a human being. What have you experienced in this most recent season of driving? How much Christmas cheer is experienced on the road these days? By the way, I have a proposal for a new law. Between Thanksgiving and January 1st, it is illegal to honk a horn in Central Florida. Are you with me on that? Why don't we just go ahead and just back that up? Because the reality is that everyone's on the road, and everyone's near around malls and shopping centers, and everyone's trying their best to get to where they want to go, and there's little pavement and lots of cars, and you going, doesn't really do anybody any good. And so, think about it. What are the more base elements of our thoughts or feelings of the world that fill us with Christmas sometimes? The lesser side of things, like anger and honking, and I wouldn't call it road rage. What are some other lesser, some things on the negative side of the ledger that fill us, that we don't want us to be filled with in Christmas? What are some other things, like what? Frustration? Yeah, that's right. What else? Stress. How many of you feel the stress rising when you even think about wrapping a present? Any of you with me? Wrapping. Somebody needs to invent a new way to wrap. And they invented, gift bags, but that's cheating. So if you're a husband, do not put your wife's gifts in gift bags, all right? It will not go well for you. Amen, sisters? They want the thoughtfulness and the gift to arrive on time and to be wrapped gingerly with your man hands. All right, so frustration, stress, anger, frustration on the road, any other lesser things that we're filled with at Christmas time? What's that? Overeating. Yeah, that is on the list. And materialism, anxiety for sure, and loneliness sometimes, sadness sometimes. Some families have suffered acute loss around the holidays, and facing the holidays is a reminder of that. Year in and year out, maybe you've lost someone important to you this year, and them not celebrating with you this Christmas brings a down note in your heart. The reality is that Christmas is designed to fill us with good things, but doesn't always necessarily fill us with good things. Let's talk about the good things. What are the good things that we're hoping to be filled with at Christmas? cookies. Thank you for being honest for all of us. My wife is too good at cooking, and that's probably obvious, but she is too good at cooking. Cookies, that's right. What are some other good things that we want to be filled up with? Yes, Lou, tell me. Yeah, your My Little Pony is probably under the tree, so thank you, Lou, for... Is that what you said, My Little Pony? No, presents, other presents, that's right. Nerf guns, presents, that's right. That's on the list. What else? What else do we anticipate?
Joy.
We do anticipate joy. Don't these songs remind us of some important and meaningful anchors of our joy? What else are some good things that we anticipate?
Together.
Absolutely. How many of you are hoping for, or even tomorrow or throughout the rest of the week, some together time with some people that you love? And some of you are here today. I want to welcome all of you. Maybe you've come as family members and guests. I want to say thank you for the privilege of being here with us tonight and celebrating what it means to be full according to Christ. We've been studying a book, Ruth, out of the Old Testament, and what an extraordinary story. It's going to take some months or years for us to get this out of our system. What an extraordinary work of literary greatness, which teaches us the dynamics of emptiness and fullness. God is the God of the empty, and God is the God of fullness. One of the most extraordinary themes throughout the book is this whole interplay between emptiness and fullness, and what true emptiness is and what true fullness is. You may remember, if you've been with us over the last few weeks, that at the end of the first chapter, Naomi was upset because she had lost many family members. She had returned home and was poorly received by her old friends, and she says, "Don't call me pleasant anymore, call me bitter, because I went away full, but now I am empty." She considered herself empty, but she wasn't calculating very accurately, because truly she had someone with her that would bring her the most unimaginable fullness in time and in eternity. And that daughter-in-law was named Ruth. The book is named after her because Ruth becomes this source of fullness for Naomi. But at this point in the story, early on, Naomi's really upset because all she saw was her emptiness. Well, she wasn't empty at all, because she had Ruth, which was God's portal of fullness, God's portal of salvation. God's way of redemption for her was through her daughter-in-law named Ruth. She was full, but she didn't know it, and God was with her in her emptiness. Maybe some of you feel empty this Christmas because of what you don't have, or you're disappointed about this or that, or there was a frustration, didn't quite go the way that you thought it would at work, or you lost something important, or you've lost someone of consequence. Maybe you consider yourself empty. God is there with you in your emptiness. And God is willing to write a story of fullness if you meet him at a special place. Now, let's take the story of Ruth for example. What is that special place? Let's think of that story. What is the place that the whole story turned? In what chapter do we find the climax of the book of Ruth? If you've been with us, hopefully it's obvious. The specific place where the whole action led up, all the dynamic, all the tension reached its crescendo, and then after that was the falling action, the resolution. What was that place of ultimate climax? It was where? On the threshing floor. Our emptiness turns to fullness on the threshing floor. I encouraged you a couple weeks ago to do a little study on the threshing floor, and that would take really a host of verses, no fewer than 15 references to threshing and threshing floors that are significant within the Scriptures. But I want to just draw one line out of this extraordinary place called the threshing floor. Let me first tell you what a threshing floor is. After the harvest, the grain still had the husk and the chaff around the kernel. You see, the kernel was what they wanted. The kernel of seed was what they wanted to roast, what they wanted to bake with, what they wanted to keep for months and months of feeding. But there was a husk and a kernel around that grain of seed. So whether it was barley or wheat, it had to go through a process of threshing. And that happened, ironically, on the threshing floor. And the threshing floor was a place where they brought in all of the wheat straight from the harvest, and it would be a place where they would run it against stones. There were several different ways that they would do this. First, if the threshing floor itself was flat enough, they could run a stone over that threshing floor, and that grinding process would remove the chaff and the husk from the kernel. And then they would take all of this grain and they would throw it up in the air. The chaff and the husk would float away and the grain would drop right down. And that's what they wanted, is the pure, simple grain that then would be used for months and months. And so threshing involved weeks of processing this wheat and this barley so that what they had remaining was ready to be consumed. It was a necessary part of this process because, again, this was how it was packaged and how it was then used in the months to come. So every farming community would have a threshing floor. And a threshing floor would be a place where multiple farmers normally would gather together and they would have their piles and they would thresh. And a lot of times the grain would be stolen because people would take advantage of the night darkness and they would come and save all the labor of planting and harvesting and threshing and just take the grain. And so they had to stand by. And that's when Ruth met Boaz at night because he was sleeping on the threshing floor. He had worked for many, many months. He had harvested. He had worked for many, many days. He was threshing. He was exhausted, and he was protecting his grain. And so Ruth went to him, and they had a special meeting. It was a pure meeting. It was an honorable meeting, and it was really an opportunity for her to ask him to marry her. And he said yes, and it's a remarkably wonderful ending to a very painful story. But emptiness turns to fullness at the threshing floor. You see, Ruth and Boaz's threshing floor isn't the only one of consequence in the Bible. The next one of consequence, in fact, probably the most famous one, is found in the story of David, King David. In 2 Samuel 24, David was looking for a place to bring an offering to God. And God told him to buy a threshing floor from Ornan. This is 2 Samuel 24. David needed to bring an offering, and God told him where to buy a place to bring that offering. And so he bought this threshing floor of Ornan. About 20 years later, God told David, build my house on that threshing floor, the threshing floor of Ornan. That's 1 Chronicles 21, 18 and following. So this threshing floor of Ornan is a famous threshing floor because it's where God said, build my house. God has one house in the Old Testament. See, he had a tent that he traveled in called the tabernacle, but David wanted to build for him a permanent dwelling place. And God said to David, build it at the threshing floor of Ornan. So this threshing floor of Ornan would be a place that the Jews would know all about. So they would know of the threshing floor where Ruth was redeemed by Boaz. Her emptiness turned to fullness. And now there's another threshing floor of Ornan where God sets up a meeting place with his people. See, the threshing floor was a meeting place, a place where people would gather. And more than that, a place where God would meet and bring his redeeming power and redeeming grace. Maybe you're new to churchy things or Bible-y things, and you don't know what the significance of redeeming is, but it's a very powerful word. Redeeming is God's willingness to take your suffering, your emptiness, and to bring you fullness and joy forevermore. I recognize that you, again, may be new to such language, but I have a wonderful Christmas gift for all of you if you would just give me just another few moments of attention, and it's this. Wherever you find emptiness, lack, shortfall, disappointment, hurt, frustration, it hasn't worked out. I wish it had gone a different way. If you meet God at his threshing floor, he will bring redemption in his way and in his time. You see, the threshing floor of Ornan was where David built a house, or really he prepared, and Solomon built a house for God, a temple. But that isn't the last dwelling place that God would have among mankind. Because if you read the early chapters of the Gospels, you'll find that God came to earth, not at the threshing floor, but in a manger, in a very similar place. There were animals, and there was wheat, and there was different places where agriculture would be prepared, and the farm would be conducted in a manger. And Jesus came there. And Jesus was just that, God coming to man to meet you. And so just like the threshing floor, God is coming to meet you. It's this great Christmas gift, is that God would come, God would meet you, God would come into your life. God came as a man to walk with us, to show us his care and his love. So whatever your emptiness is, whatever your difficulty is, whatever your challenge is, if you meet him at the threshing floor, he will meet you and bring this glorious redemption. This isn't churchy talk. This is a word of grace for all of you. I didn't grow up around the church. I didn't grow up around knowing Christmas carols, the story of the Lord Jesus Christ coming in a manger, very humble, very plain, very normal circumstances. I didn't understand the consequence of why he came to take my emptiness, my frustration, my darkness, and to give me something different through the grace of his appearing. He has appeared, and our entire Western culture pivots around Christmas because the consequence of his coming is eternal in significance. And I want it to be eternal in significance for you. So I want just for a moment for you to take just a few seconds to recognize that I'm not saying preachy things out of a sense of Christian tradition. I'm offering you a word of grace so that your life can pivot as well at the coming of the Lord Jesus. Whatever your needs are, whatever your challenges are, do you know that you have been saved by grace for eternal salvation? You know, because if you're thoughtful about it, you'll recognize that there's an eternity. God has written eternity on our hearts, so we recognize that there is something coming beyond just the here and now. And all of this is intended to pivot at the person of Jesus Christ who came to meet with us and to take our emptiness and to render it as eternal fullness. I hope you receive these words as a gift from the Lord to you, the true realization that he has come to bring this pivot point for all of us. Have you experienced it? Have you known it? I would encourage you strongly, if you're not sure if you have, to make sure that you do. Speak with us after the service, one of the elders or me personally. I would love to have an interaction with you to make sure that you know what it means to receive this fullness for your emptiness and to have this pivot point for your life at the point of God meeting you in the person of Jesus Christ. Has Christmas really dawned on your soul? Has it really overwhelmed your heart? Have you experienced this pivot? If you're not sure, be sure this year. It is a tremendous gift and mercy that God would bring us his son, Jesus Christ, to take our emptiness and give us fullness. The gift is extended to you. If you receive it by faith and be born again.